BulaNetwork.com, episode 205. How I Podcast. Inside the Yellow Studio, circa 2014. Yeah, that's the subject today. No, it's not about business, not about storytelling, not about marketing. So if that's off-putting to you, then okay, I get it. Click stop. I'm not going to be offended. But hey, if you care about what goes on inside the Yellow Studio and you're a gearhead, you're really into podcasting and all this stuff and the workflow and the gear, hey, well, let's do it, okay? We'll do it next. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Yeah, Texas. Baja, Oklahoma. All right, first I'm going to start out and I'm going to talk about workflow, but I want to direct you first and foremost to the website, Bula, B-U-L-A. It's a Fiji term, by the way. It means life, in particular, it means life is good, I think it is. So I named my company Bula Network, LLC. It is a Fiji term that is analogous to aloha in Hawaiian. It means both hello and goodbye. So it's kind of a cool term. Never been to Fiji. Would like to go someday, but I came across the term about 35 years ago, fell in love with it, and began to use it a lot, especially in internal company communication like memos and stuff. Used it as a greeting, kind of like hello. So instead of saying, Dear Sam, or I'd say Bula, B-U-L-A, with an exclamation mark. Okay, so now you know. Hey, go to BulaNetwork.com/205, and you will see the blog post. Well, in podcasting terms, we call them show notes. And what you will also see is you'll see a gallery of photographs, lots of photographs for this episode, because there are a lot of pictures of various and sundry things here inside the Yellow Studio that may... Well, it might be interesting to you. I hope it is. I used a new little plugin, by the way. Well, it's new to me. I was commissioned some time ago to do a website for a nonprofit, and they had tons and tons of photographs and some galleries, and their previous site was not WordPress. It was all HTML. And I went looking for a gallery plugin and found one and got to playing around with it. And so when I began to do today's episode, I thought back about that gallery plugin. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go try that because you can insert a gallery inside a post. Ever been to a website and one post has maybe a dozen photographs? And it doesn't matter what device you're reading the site from, a mobile device or a desktop or a laptop. And you just scroll and you scroll and you scroll because it makes the post just so stinking long, especially if the photos are large. Okay, well, you can overcome that by using a gallery plugin. Very cool. Very cool. Anyway, it's at the top of the page for episode 205. So I'm calling this How I Podcast Inside the Yellow Studio circa 2014 because, well, people do it differently. All kinds of people do it differently. And I'm going to start about workflow, because some years ago, back, man, I don't even know, 2006, 2005, it's been that long. I mean, it's been that long since I kind of did all this stuff. I wanted a broadcast workflow. Broadcast workflow simply meant, well, what many people today call live to hard drive. I didn't want to have to record. Okay, now go back and now edit this and take that out and insert this. And okay, now lay your music bed here and, you know, bring it all together in this multi-track editor. And no, thank you. I wanted to fire it up, hit record, go, do whatever you got to do to the MP3 files, like ID3 tags, be done. So I can tell you that my workflow, now I'm not talking about preparation, but from the time that I hit record, I can be done in minutes, mere minutes. We're not talking about any big shakes. I don't go in and, well, I don't go in and take out ums and ahs and all that good stuff. Maybe that drives people crazy, but I just roll with it. So on one hand, I can tell you that I am a professional. On the other hand, I'm a rank amateur. Professional in the sense that, yeah, I've pretty much made a living podcasting, but really more in new media content creation than anything. So I get it. And I'm kind of using that as a little bit of a disclaimer because I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. If you love podcasting and there's something that you crazy or insanely mad about, and you'd like to talk about it and you'd like to record a show about it, you don't have to do it the way I'm doing it. Well, you can do it the way I'm doing it, but you don't have to use the equipment that I've got. Is that fair? And I'll mention all this as we go. So my workflow is really simple because, well, I do so much through hardware. Now, you can easily do stuff through software, and it's not like it's crazy, insane, hard to do. And it's not like it takes an inordinate amount of time. If you want to process audio files through software, that doesn't take a whole long, big long time. Editing is what takes time. Chopping up things, laying audio on top of audio, whether that's music or anything else. Yeah, all of that stuff's time consuming and can be really tedious. To take an entire file, like this recording, for instance, and say, okay, I want to apply a certain process to this. You know, maybe I want to add compression. I want to add some EQ. Okay, all of that can be done super, super duper quick. And there's all kinds of software that will do that. And that very well may be the way that you should go. So I'm not sitting here saying that there's one size fits all. In fact, I'm a person who's rather anti-absolutes. I know a lot of people, they love them. And we've talked about this before, and it seems to come up in a lot of areas of life, especially in podcasting, because you'll find some people that will be, oh, I would never record to a computer. I would always record to an outboard device, a digital recorder. And other people who will take the counter argument, I would never record to a digital. I would always. I'm just not a big fan of never or always. I'm just not. I think, you know, different things for different folks, and that's okay. Hey, the latest edition, by the way, the very first photograph that you'll see in the blog post for today's show is a photograph of the newest, latest gadget here in the Yellow Studio, and that is a Zoom H6 digital recorder. Unbelievable. I mean, this thing is ridiculous. For years, I have had an Eterol 09, an R09, a great little recorder. Problem, it doesn't have XLR TRS hybrid inputs, and I wanted XLR TRS hybrid inputs. And yeah, the Eterol's getting a little bit long in the tooth. You know, sometimes it likes to turn off of its own free will. Some of the buttons, sometimes they work, sometimes, you know, it's wonky. You know, it's been great. It's not the unit's fault, it's sheer usage. Because this thing is out and about a lot. I use it out in the field, as they say, a lot, like every week. Hey, special shout out to Patrick over at Sweetwater Sound. Patrick is my rep at Sweetwater Sound. He sold me the H6, and he has sold me other stuff as well. Sweetwater Sound is, I highly recommend them. They're great folks. I just like them. I can't recommend them highly enough. Now, not everything in the Yellow Studio came from Sweetwater. In fact, quite a lot of it did not, because quite a lot of it is more, it's more BSW kind of gear. It's, and quite frankly, BSW and Sweetwater Sound are the two providers of choice. BSWUSA.com and, Anyway, great companies, both of them. This Zoom unit, it comes with a hard shell case, and I'm a detail freak. So if you look at the photograph, you'll notice the hinges, even the hinges on the case are just really well done. The unit comes with a windscreen, a USB cable, a couple of microphone interfaces, and a really small capacity SD card. No big deal. You know what I wish it would have come with? An AC adapter. Come on, Zoom. How about we get an AC adapter? You can buy it. You got to go through parts or something for $24. They do have an accessory kit. It's got some other stuff in it that I don't really care anything about. It's $55, so spend $55 to get some stuff you may or may not want so that you can get a $24 AC adapter. I don't know. But I'm picky like that. It is a multi-channel digital recorder, and here's the cool thing. It also serves as a USB interface. I mean, how cool is that? Has phantom power. That's kind of nice. Well, it is if you have a mic that needs phantom power. I do. I have a Rode NTG2 condenser shotgun mic. By the way, do you shoot video? If you shoot video and you don't use a shotgun mic, I can't recommend the Rode NTG2 highly enough. It's a terrific mic, and if you're not using shotgun mics to record your video, your audio for on your video, you're making a big mistake. The sound of shotgun mics versus a lav mic, big difference. Well, it's the reason that professional videographers and filmmakers use shotgun mics. Now, mostly the shotgun mic of choice for the high-end pros is a Sennheiser 416. And if I had $1,100 laying around, I would have one. If I had $2,200 around, I would have two of them. That's how much I think that mic is terrific. But the NTG2 is kind of a poor man's 416. So I'm a poor man, so it's my 416. But, hey, let's go back a little bit, shall we? Let's go back kind of, not to the beginning, but let's go back and kind of review the gear, because I know that's what you care about. Episode 76, by the way, was the first go-around where I kind of gave people a peek inside the Yellow Studio, and admittedly, not a whole lot has changed, but I'll get you up to speed. And that was, I don't know, that was over 130 episodes ago, because there are quite a few unnumbered episodes, not to mention the fact that there are quite a few other podcasts and voicing kind of jobs that have come out of the Yellow Studio since episode 76 of this podcast. So I'm going to confess, not a whole lot has changed necessarily through the years, but I know that as podcasters, I know that we can be really geeky, and I know we love to see studios, and we love to find out what other gear people are using, and we like to find out why are they using that, and how are they using that. I'm going to try to make a logical approach to this, because I know that you want to know more about the Yellow Studio. And for starters, the question comes up, the name. And if you look at the photo gallery of the show notes, you will see the color of the walls. And you'll figure out very quickly why the name is the name. But people often ask, well, why yellow? I just answer, why not? Now, truth is, there are some colors that I love. I'm one of those guys that if somebody says, well, what's your favorite color? I would say, I don't have a favorite color. I have a few favorite colors. I love yellow, orange, red, and hunter green. Yeah, don't ask me. It's preference, okay? It is what it is. When I was 15 years old, now, side note here, I was in Louisiana. I lived in Louisiana at the time. I was 15. In Louisiana, when I was 15, you could get your driver's license, your full-blown driver's license. I don't mean, what do they call them, a permit? No, you could get your real license at 15, and I did. And I got a 1954 GMC pickup truck. Well, my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, bought it for me. And he got it for... he said at the time he got it for $150 from a farmer. It had been kind of left out in a field, abandoned somewhere. And he was a businessman in Oklahoma, in my hometown where I was born, Ada, Oklahoma. And he took it back to his shop and had a mechanic get it back in running order and got good tires on it. And And it was, you know, it was very dry. It was perfectly fine. It was drivable. He even had the seats redone. He had the seats recovered in a new vinyl, you know, just a bench seat. So I drove it back from Oklahoma to Louisiana. No air conditioning, no radio, just this bare bones classic truck. And the paint was faded hunter green. And man, I loved it. It was great. We had great fun in high school with this truck. In fact, I had so much fun with it and I loved it so much that when I got home with it, I commissioned a friend of mine. We got together and we painted it hunter green with orange fender flares. And there's a photograph. There's an actual photograph with a 15-year-old version of me sitting on the front bumper. That's, man, that's worth the price of admission right there. I mean, you can actually see me with hair. Not too much of it, in fact. Well, too much of it in front. Bangs. Bangs galore. Oh, I left out the most obvious thing. Well, the least obvious thing, but the most obvious point that I need to make, and that is we painted it with auto paint, but we painted it with a brush. It looked good. It looked good. Now, it looked better if you stood back a little bit, but listen, we were very careful to not leave brush strokes or brush bristles in the paint. It looked good. Go look at the photograph, BulaNetwork.com/205. You'll see a picture of it. I'm telling you, it looked good. Man, I wish I had it. The truck was clean. If you look at the photograph along the top ridge right above the windshield, you'll notice one little crease, like right in the middle. It looked like somebody dropped something on the roof of this thing. It was just one little crease. Otherwise, there weren't dings or dents or rust. I mean, it was a nice truck. Three on the tree, the transmission. Oh, we had great fun with it in high school. That was back when, you know, you could leave high school and load up the whole back with buddies and cops didn't care. Nobody cared. I mean, people rode in the back of pickup trucks all the time. Can't do that today, I don't think. I don't think they'll let you do that today. Safety issues and all that. I don't even think the thing had seat belts. I'm fairly certain it didn't have seat belts. You know, and I think about it now and I think about how parents of 15-year-olds let their kids out driving something like that. No, that would not happen. But anyway, you see the choice of my colors and I was 15. So that tells you what you need to know. My first real car, my first new car was a Pontiac Le Mans, and it was painted according to what General Motors called Sundance Orange. I picked it. Yeah, I picked it. So Orange was a big player for me. So why not the Orange Studio, you may ask? Well, I never considered painting the walls orange because, well, number one, it seemed too dark, and I didn't want anything that dark. I wanted it to be lighter. But mainly, I had this moment of clarity when I was watching TV one night. Do you remember the TV show House? So I'm watching the TV show House and his boss. You remember his boss, Cuddy? Cuddy had yellow walls on her office, mustard yellow, the exact shade that I knew I wanted when I first built the studio. And so, of course, I didn't have a name for the studio at the time, and I wasn't thinking about a name. The name came much later. But the moment I saw Cuddy's office on television, I told my wife, that's the color I want to paint the walls right there. There it is. So she and Dina, a close friend, they painted the walls. They had to find the right shade of yellow, and so that's how the name came to be, the Yellow Studio. People inquire about the physical space, so let's get the boring stuff out of the way, and then we'll get on to the cool stuff. The space is about 13 by 14 and a half. There is an adjoining bathroom. That's convenient. There is a small closet. It's not a walk-in closet. It's one of those old-fashioned, you know, open a single door. And that closet, by the way, is filled with way too many plastic storage boxes full of cables and other audio paraphernalia. Two large windows that have wooden slat shutters on the inside. You can see photographs, I think, of that. There is an overhead fluorescent light that rarely gets turned on. The things that you can't see, most notably, are four full-height bookcases that are directly behind me as I'm sitting in front of the computer. They're out of sight most of the time, and they are filled from top to bottom with books. There are three other 5-foot-high bookcases in the studio, also filled to capacity. there is a 4 foot high bookcase that's filled to capacity with books. Well, the top shelf isn't. The top shelf has a Polk Audio HD clock radio. It also has a lamp on it. I call it my Three Monkeys lamp. It's the Hear No Evil, See No Evil, Speak No Evil monkeys, and there's a lamp. There's a CD carousel, and you'll see this in the photographs, in the corner, and that houses about 2,000 CDs, and there are more CDs hither and yon. And by the way, there are a lot more books besides what's in the yellow studio. I have in my garage, I have boxes and boxes of books, and I have other bookcases throughout the house that have books as well. So I'm a book, I don't know what I am, a book hound, a book freak. There's a two-drawer Lowboy filing cabinet. I think it's made actually for lateral, mostly for lateral files, but it can be converted to regular files as well. I don't have any files in it because mine's full of papers and boxes and junk. Three chairs can sit around the table, the broadcast table, which, by the way, the broadcast table is just a conference table. Some people have asked about the floor. Is the floor carpeted? Yes, the floor is carpeted. It has a light green, low plush carpet. You can look at the pictures, by the way, and you can notice in some of the pictures, the ceiling. The ceiling has a special 1980s feature called popcorn ceiling. Oh, man, whoever invented popcorn texturing of ceiling, they need to be shot. Well, they're probably dead already. Good riddance. You know, I hate it, but it is a royal pain and a major mess to change it, so I have it. Somebody asked about the venting in the room because I get, you know, the silence is pretty good in here. Books do that, by the way. Books help and some other things. Electronics help. You know, having a noise gate, that helps. But there is one vent coming into, I can tell you one secret. Because you know what rattles? Yeah, the contraption over the vent, you know, the little louvers and all that. So my vent is simply a hole in the ceiling where the vent comes down. You know, the little louvered wind thrower thing, that's gone. That's sitting up in the top of the closet. So there are no rattles when the AC comes on. All right, that's enough about the space. You don't care about any of that stuff. Let's get down to brass tacks because one of the first things I listed in 76, episode 76, I'm going to list today, and that is the Herman Miller Myra chair. And I like the chair. It's sitting in the garage because I ditched it because it's never worked properly, and they have a lifetime warranty. I need to take it in. The problem is it's clear across town from where I am, and it's just a hassle. So I haven't done it yet, so I'm not sitting in that chair, and I haven't sat in that chair for probably 2 years. How sad is that? The heart of the whole thing is the computer, and I'm an Apple Mac person. I have been since 1984 when the very first Mac came out. I bought the very first Mac with an image writer, and I spent just under $4,000. Can you believe that? Yeah, well, believe it. It didn't have a hard drive, kids. It had a single micro floppy drive. You could buy a second micro floppy drive. Well, why would you do that, you ask? Well, so you could put the program floppy in one drive and a storage floppy in the other, and you wouldn't have to keep swapping them out. That's why. $4,000. Unbelievable. I have about a three-year-old iMac, 27-inch iMac with an i7 processor. The gig is maxed out, or the RAM is maxed out at 16 gig. It has an internal terabyte hard drive. I do have an external multi-terabyte hard drive, by the way, backing stuff up. The studio used to be a two-computer studio because I had an Apple MacBook Pro, which bit the dust. Motherboard went out, so $900 for a repair was just stupid, so I didn't do it. So I sold it to Gazelle. You know how much I got for it? $21 in Amazon credit. How sad is that? That was, you know, better than drilling holes through it and throwing it in the trash. So I got something out of it. In its place, really, is an Apple iPad Air. Yeah, the newest one, the big one, the 128 gig jobberdoo with AT&T network capability. Don't have it activated, but if it's there if I need it. So I'm really no longer a two-computer studio. I'll talk more about that later. Software, and this is just kind of in random order here, Ambrosia Wiretap Studio. Ambrosia Wiretap Studio is an audio recording software and editor that you can basically, you can bring in anything to it. So any of the stuff that I'm using right now externally, I could use, but you can record audio off of Chrome, Safari, a browser. You could snag audio off of a YouTube video. Very handy, very convenient. Audio Hijack Pro is another one, and I own it too. And they both basically do the same thing. Their interface is a little bit different, but I would highly recommend one or the other. They're just terribly convenient when you need to just go snag something. But you could very easily podcast using, and I think Wiretap Studio is $70. You could very easily use that as a full, as your full blown, you know, as they call it, a DAW, digital audio workstation. A simple one. Now, my DAW of choice is Twisted Wave, and Twisted Wave isn't expensive. Twisted Wave is terrific. It is terrific. If you're doing podcasting, a number of voiceover artists have migrated to Twisted Wave because it's just drop dead simple and works, and it's great. And by the way, the Frenchman who did it, he's just terrific at support. Not that you need a lot of it, but if you do, he's very responsive and very accommodating. Twisted Wave, that is my audio recording software of choice. I have used and been an owner of, back before it was cloud based, of Audition, and I know, you know, and it's big, and hey, why not? You know, for $20 a month or more if you want the entire suite of products. And Audition is, yeah, it's terrific. It's great. It's just overkill for what I need to do and the way my workflow is. I do have an audio plugin that is pretty terrific, especially for podcasters or people that, you know, do voice intensive kind of things. It's called Dialogue. It's by Wave Arts. There's links to all of these, by the way, if you go to buildernetwork.com/205. So no need to write any of this down. There's links. And by the way, the links are not affiliate links. I do have some affiliate links, but the links in the show notes are not affiliate links. I would love it if you went to the recommended resources link, though, in the footer of the website, because I got all kinds of stuff there that I both use and recommend. And anyway, yeah, so if you want to support me, Please, by all means, take advantage. When it comes to sound carts, and that is the insertion of music and various and sundry things, I've got a couple of different pieces of software. One of the first ones that I bought was Ambrosia Soundboard, and it's terrific, and the interface is great, but I bought Soundbyte, BYTE, by Black Cat Systems, even before I bought Soundboard, and I've just been using Soundbyte. I've never migrated over. I have Soundbyte on the iPad, and I have Soundbyte also on an iPhone. Right now, for instance, I'm using Soundbyte on my iPhone. So that music that you heard at the beginning of the show, all I did is I opened up the app on my phone, and I hit a button. And when I hit that button, it plays. And I can hit a button, and, well, here, you want to hear some Funk Masters? There you go. There's Funk Masters, and I got some jazz here that we can play. Anyway, a sound cart app is just like the old sound carts, and the reason it's called a sound cart app is because that's physically what they used to be. They used to be sound cartridges. You know, they look much like 8-tracks. You shove them in, hit a trigger button, and they play. Except now it's all digital, so... You know, here's the theme music to Leaning Toward Wisdom, another podcast that I do. So you hit a button and it starts, you hit a button and it stops, and it's really cool like that. So I have Soundbyte on the iPad, the iPhone, and I've got it on my computer as well. ID3 tags. So to put all that metadata and all the cool stuff and name your episodes and all that, I use ID3 editor. Again, I'm on a Macintosh, and if you're on a PC, well, you have my sympathies. I also use for my FTP program Transmit by Panic. Is that right? Did I say that right? It's Transmit. Yeah, it's Transmit. I'm thinking, okay, that doesn't look right, but that is right. Transmit by Panic. Yes, I own another one, and I love the name of the other one. I just don't use it very much. CyberDuck. You know, whatever FTP client you need to use for your word processing, for your WordPress and whatever else, you know. I mean, you got to have an FTP program, so mine is Transmit by Panic. Do you use Skype? What are you thinking? You need to use Skype. Of course, increasingly, you know what you need to use. You just need to use Google. But Skype is still terrific. And in spite of the recent hubbub about Microsoft, who bought Skype out, that they're going to cancel all these third-party things. And, well, Call Recorder ain't one of them. Call Recorder by Ecamm. If you want to see how this really works, especially if you're into video, which I don't do that much of, Andrew Warner at Mixergy, Mixergy, Mixergy.com, and he has a terrific podcast. He has talked to probably 900, mostly tech entrepreneurs, and I've been an avid fan of his since he started that project years ago. He uses Call Recorder and Skype, and it puts his recording on one side of the screen and his guest on the other, records the video and records the audio, and it just, you know, it just works. And it's really inexpensive. It's, I don't know, what is it, $25, $30? It's not very much money. And it's great. By the way, if you want to use Skype and you don't want to use, and you already bought and you're just doing audio, you don't care about video, and you've already purchased Wiretap Studio or Audio Hijack Pro, no need for Call Recorder, because both of those programs, all you got to do, you can go in your preferences and set it to record Skype. So you could easily use either one of those programs if you're just recording audio. The beauty of Call Recorder is not only will it record audio, but it will record video, and it has some settings as well. You can set the recording to show side by side or picture in a picture. Really cool. Really cool. I've already told you about the Eterol recorder that has been kind of a staple here for a long time. People are always interested in the mixers and the consoles, or the boards, as they call them in the big pro world. Mine is a Broadcast Tools ProMix 12 broadcast console or mixer. They don't make it anymore. You could probably find one used. Would I suggest it? Sure, it's great. It's built like a tank. It's a 3-microphone console. It does have preamps built on board. All of mine are disabled. And that's a hassle, by the way. I wish they'd make it easier where you could disable the preamp on the thing easier, because I'm using what are called vocal strips. I'm using hardware, so my microphones don't go straight into a mixer. They go into another piece of equipment, which in turn comes into the mixer. So I'm using those outboard pieces for the preamps. I don't need the preamp in the mixer, so I had to disable them. And to do that, you just had to do major surgery, it felt like, and take these little jumpers off of some pins inside, and they don't make it easy for you to get inside. So that was a hassle, but it is, as the name implies, it is a 12-channel board, hence the name ProMix 12. Again, 3 mics. It does have, here's the difference, and people often ask, you know, what's the difference in, you know, in like a broadcast console and, you know, a Behringer or a Mackie or these consoles that we see everybody else using? Some of the differences, well, the biggest difference is pro, you know, is more professional input-output levels. Easiest way to say it is balanced versus unbalanced. For instance, this board, not a single RCA jack, that's an unbalanced input or output. So this thing has got XLRs, insert, you know, quarter inch tip ring sleeve, TRS kinds of jacks. So, all of the cabling in and out of this thing, it's made for balanced audio inputs and outputs, which is obvious to eliminate hum and anything else that might get in the way, you know, in a broadcast environment. The downside is if you wanted to connect consumer level or consumer grade kind of stuff to it, no real way to do that. Ah, but yes, there is. Because I have another mixer. I'll talk about that here in a minute. But another difference between broadcast and, say, you know, the Mackie or the Behringer kind of boards is the throw distance of the faders. Those slider controls, and some of them are knobs. I'm preferential to sliders. The sliders on kind of a consumer board, they might be 4 inches, you know, in length. And the ones on the ProMix 12 are probably going to be more like 6 inches. Okay, well, what does that mean? It's just when you fade in and you fade out, it makes for a much smoother fade in, fade out, kind of a small thing. One of the bigger things is channel 4 on this board, which is the first non-mic channel, is a plus-minus channel. I do have a telephone hybrid, so I can bring in phone calls. And I'll talk more about that piece here in a minute, but I've got that connected to channel 4, which is the plus-minus, mix-minus channel. Did I say plus-minus? I'm a hockey guy. There is a stat in hockey known as plus-minus, and I almost always, instead of mix minus, say plus minus. Hazards of being a hockey guy. Mix minus. Mix minus basically is for the person that, let's say that I'm interviewing someone and they're on the telephone. And if I don't have my mix minus set, then the person on the phone that I brought into my studio electronically, they'll hear themselves. So as they're speaking, they hear this echo back in their ear. Because I'm getting their signal, but I'm sending their signal right back to them. Okay, we don't want to do that. We want to get their signal. That means we want the mix and we want the minus. That is, we want to cancel out the signal that they're sending us going back to them, because the echo will drive you crazy. My board handles that automatically. I don't have to twist or tweak any knobs. And if you have a Mackie or a Behringer, or in my case, a Yamaha, a consumer kind of a board, you've got to turn certain knobs up and certain knobs down, and it's not a big deal. Once you get it set, it's kind of set, but it's still additional knobs to turn. The broadcast boards tend to have a mix minus built in. You know, you plug it, you go, you move on. And so this board has that as well. Additionally, just built like a tank. I mean, they're just built like a tank. So that's the mixer. I've already told you about the Zoom H6. The other mixer is a Yamaha, and I don't know why this unit doesn't get as much love. It really should. It's a Yamaha MG124C. I believe the C stands for compressor. It's got some little compressors built on board. I don't need that. Don't use them. I would highly recommend this thing, and we're not talking about crazy money. I'm thinking that I got this thing for $150, give or take. I bought it from BSW, and it's great. It is great. It has insert. Not every consumer board has insert capabilities, so it has insert capabilities. The slide, it's really well made. The controls are, they all feel really good. It doesn't feel like a Behringer. And I know Behringer, you know, a lot of people love Behringer because this stuff is, it's inexpensive. I think the Mackie boards are better personally, but this board's terrific. And I had somebody in radio recommend this board because they used it out in the field when they went and did, you know, if they did some remote broadcast and whatnot, they would actually use this board. And if you can't tell that the Yellow Studio has been influenced by people in the broadcast industry, well, okay, you've been asleep. I don't come from the broadcast industry, in spite of the fact that I went to broadcast journalism school, and in spite of the fact that I'm a gearhead, but I knew what I wanted to do and I knew how I wanted to do it. I knew I didn't want to spend life in front of an audio editor. And so naturally, broadcast engineers were like, well, you need to think about this and think about this. And if I were doing it, here's what I would do. And it's proven out for me. You know, I'm not telling you that you need to go this route, but in picking a board, I'd give serious consideration, if I were you, to the Yamaha. And I don't have a dog in this fight, but I would give serious consideration to the Yamaha MG124, as opposed to a Behringer or a Mackie. I don't think it gets near enough love. And podcasters is kind of what goes on. You know, a podcaster gets onto something, starts telling other people, and other people, they go with whatever, you know, the guy is saying to go with. And so I get it. And I'm not saying that you can go, get a Mackie over a Behringer. I would tell you that much. But I love this board. So here's the reason for this board. I've got this board going into an input on the Pro Mix 12 board. So I can bring in my iPad. I can bring in any number of things. I could hook a cassette deck up to it if I had one. Well, I have done that, by the way. A boombox. I mean, I could hook up anything because I've got all different kinds of inputs. I can hook up a microphone. I've got inserts. I've got RCAs. I've got XLRs. So I can now hook anything that can hook up to a consumer piece of gear and or pro. I can hook up to the Yamaha and patch that into the board. So when you hear those sound clips like the jazz, I have the iPhone connected by way of RCA cables to the very last input on the Yamaha board. I've got that slider up where I want it. And now on channel 5 of my main console, I have the Yamaha mixer. So all of the output from the Yamaha mixer is going into channel 5 on the main board. So I got the best of both worlds. So I don't have connectivity issues. If it's got audio and there's a way to get the audio out of it, I'm good to go. So there. Microphones. Are you a microphone hound? Me too. Probably the oldest pieces of gear. I'm trying to think. I can't think of what I've got that could be older. 2 PR40s. Heil sound. Yeah, I don't need to tell you any more about those. Shock mounts, the Heil shock mounts, the SM1s, the PL2T booms. The one I'm talking on hasn't worked right for a long time. Buddies that know Bob Heil and that know Heil really well, I don't. Said, man, get a hold of them. They'll make that good. You know, it won't stay. It never has held its position. It's never worked properly, and I just go with it. I've got it rigged so it works, and you know, I'm sure they would stand behind it. I'm not worried about that. I didn't want to go to the trouble to contact somebody and send it in. I'm like, it's fine. It's fine. I do have a riser on the one that I'm talking on, an RS1 12 inch extension riser. Sorry, as you're hearing, did that come through the recording? Probably did. You know what I love about the new Mac software? One of the things that I love, messages. I forgot to close messages, so a message just came through. So the Zoom sound that you heard, sorry. Hey, it's live. It's live to hard drive, kids. I'm not editing that. You know, go with it. VAC, I don't know what VAC stands for, VAC, pop filters. I've got those on each PR40. I do have some other pop filters. I've got quite a few pop filters, come to think of it. And I do have a Heil Sound foam pop filter. Don't ask me why. It was crazy. It was crazy money at the time, long, long time ago. I got this thing for whatever reason, thought, you know, okay, if I'm ever out and about and I want to use a PR40, I mean, who does that? Nobody, but I've got one. I don't use it because it does sound different. It sounds very different than these VAC pop filters. It doesn't muffle it, but it does take some highs off that I can hear. Speaking of microphones, Giant Squid. And I used a Giant Squid a long, long time ago that a friend had, and I'd never heard of it, but I thought, you know, that is cool. It was a stereo mic, and I own one. I have a Giant Squid cardioid stereo mic. Basically, it's a little lav mic. You can stick it on one person, stick one on yourself. You know, jam the little 1/8-inch jack into your Eterol or digital recorder, and you could interview somebody, and there you go. And you're not having to hold a microphone. How cool is that? Problem is, mine have never worked, and I don't know. I've had it quite a few years, and my messaging, my texting is just absolutely going to blow up. You know, and you're hearing all that. I'm sorry. And what can you say? You know, when you're popular, there's just, you just have to go with it. Where was I? Giant squid. Again, it's kind of like the high elf, my own fault. I believe in the company. I know the stuff is great. I just, mine have never worked. It didn't work when I got it. Plugged it up and I thought, well, I clearly don't know how to work this thing. So I kind of shoved it in a drawer and then I dug it out again, tried it on a different digital recorder, didn't work. Tried it on another digital recorder, never did work. Plugged it in some video cameras and didn't work. And then just forgot about it until recently when I got the Zoom H6. And when I got the Zoom H6, I dug it out because I've still got it wrapped in the cellophane, you know, that it came in and or the little bubble wrap. Took it out, plugged it in. No, nothing. I did send off an email just asking, hey, you know, what would it cost me to have you look at this thing and fix this thing? I think it's great, though. More microphones, Electro Voice RE50B microphones. These are the ones that you see news guys use as they're doing some live shot out. And the reason is, well, there's a couple of reasons. One, the handling noise is non-existent. So you can just manhandle this thing and it doesn't make its way to the capsule, which is great. The other thing is, I don't know what I'm going to have to do. Do you use a Mac and do you use is it iMessage? I mean, it's great. It really is great. The problem that I've got, and maybe you have this problem, there needs to be a way where you can opt out of group chats, group texting. Does group texting just drive you out of your ever-loving mind sometimes? Because it does me. I've got some guys that I just, and the minute I get one, I know better than to respond, because if I respond, it's going to go absolutely crazy. And, you know, it can be a group chat that's sent to four or five guys, and it's just a blitz. It's just a constant blitz. And it's like, man, I can't get out of this. You know, it's not one of those things you can opt out of. You need to be able to opt out of those things. So there, Apple, listen to me. I finally went to airplane mode. Hopefully that'll shut it up. So this is what happens, kids, in live podcasting as opposed to dead podcasting. The other thing about the RE50, he says, not missing a beat, the handling noise is non-existent, but additionally it has built-in windscreens that are great. I mean, great. You can see a reporter out in the worst weather known to mankind, and these things still sound terrific. And the third thing is they're just made like tanks. They're great. Electro Voice RE50B mics. They're about $200 a piece. I told you about the NTG2 shotgun mic. Something, if you shoot with a DSLR, which I don't own, by the way, but if I knew more about photography or video, I would. You need to get a shotgun mic. And this thing it's under $300. It's terrific. It sounds great. And, yeah, it's the way to go. All right. Now for the really cool stuff. And they don't get as much attention now. They got some attention a few years ago. Aphex 230 voice channel processors, otherwise known in the industry as vocal strips. These are units. There's one for each PR40. So my microphones go into the Aphex 230. This microphone I'm speaking into is going into an Aphex 230. The 230 has a lot of different things going on with it, all in one chassis. It is a single rack mount unit. It has a noise gate. It has a compressor. It has a limiter. It has an aural exciter. I know that'll get your motor going. It's A-U-R-A-L, exciter. So get your mind out of the gutter. And if you have an aural exciter, you must have some other feature called Big Bottom. And I think that's a registered name, by the way. I'm almost certain. Well, I think aural exciter is too, now that I think about it. Well, if you're going to have an aural exciter, you got to have a Big Bottom. And I happen to have both. Thank you very much. I have a baritone bass, so I don't vase a baritone bass. I have a baritone voice. Hello. Did I say something about your mouth having to work properly if you're going to be podcasting? Okay, well, scratch that. I'm living proof that that's not necessary. Well, here you go. The Big Bottom, it has two knobs. One is called tune and one is called mix. Mix is, think of it as a volume control, and think of tune as the frequency. So I could lower the frequency that I want to emphasize. Now I basically keep it turned off. So it's turned all the way down, but let's play with it and I'll show you what I mean. So I can turn it to, we want to add a big bottom. So now we're adding some big bottom. And so we turn it up and we get, yeah. Can you hear it? Sure. You can hear it. I can hear it through my headphones. So the big bottom. Okay. Well, I have a big bottom. Problem is I don't need a big bottom. So I'm going to the gym more and more. So anyway, the Aphex 230, a famous, famous vocal strip. It is now called the Channel, I think. They redid the cosmetics. I don't know if they redid anything inside the unit. I mean, it's a classic unit, the Aphex 230. You know, people in broadcast, I mean, it's a known entity. There are a handful of units that are really kind of staple kinds of processors. Symmetrix 528 is one. Okay, I'm not real wild about it. DBX, the DBX stuff is really, really good. If I were somebody and I wanted to use hardware and I didn't want to go, and these are not inexpensive units, I'll have you know, but they're made, mine have been on and working. When I say on, I mean turned on. I don't think they've been turned off, for years and years, and they're probably just now broken in. So, but you just have to think about a radio station, you know, that's broadcasting 24/7, 365, and gear that's made to hold up to the rigors of that. So that's part of what you're paying for. And you're also paying for just, you know, the circuitry and the sonic quality of it, which admittedly, when you're throwing stuff down on an MP3 is a little bit different. Here's the advantage. Here's one advantage of hardware, my workflow. I don't have to go back and edit. I don't have to add this stuff in. I'm laying down the stuff and it's there. The other advantage, if you do live stuff, and increasingly with Google Hangouts on air live and with people wanting to do webinars and stuff. So there is that advantage. Now I will tell you, one of the frustrating things for me is Google Hangouts. I'm having interface problems because, you know, the FireWire and whatnot, and I'm encountering a lot of other people who do too. And so it's kind of frustrating when you're relegated to having to plug in a USB microphone in a Google Hangout. Now, Skype, I'm good to go. I have no problems with everything that I've got and everything that I've described working with Skype, but I do run into some difficulties right now with Google Hangouts, and hopefully Google will, help me figure that out. But that's the other advantage. The advantage is the way it sounds right now to you. If I were live with you on Skype, that's also how this would sound, because I'm not processing it after the fact. I'm processing it in real time using hardware. I think I told you it had a noise gate and all that good stuff, compression. And you know, some people love compression. Some people hate it. Most of us who love it, we love it, and we love it a lot. I'm not a fan of it just making your ears bleed, but compression just basically punches your voice through. Compression is what allows you to hear a DJ as you're in the car going 100 miles an hour. It allows his voice to come through really clear. So I'm a fan of compression when done correctly. So there are two Aphex 230s. I also have another compressor in line. It is kind of the final processor, and it is made by TC Electronic. And it is a TC Electronic Finalizer Express. I don't know really how to describe this unit. This unit has more bells and whistles and knobs and lights and things on it than, you know, it's pretty to look at, especially when you have the lights turned off. So it kind of serves as a modern day lava lamp for me. But if you're into twisting and tweaking, I don't do that. So talk to someone else, because I get mine set the way I want it and I leave it alone. I had some professional help with that one years ago. I locked and loaded it and never looked back. everything goes through the finalizer. That's the thing. So whether it's something through the iPad, the iPhone, prior to that, my laptop. So if I had a Skype call coming in through the laptop, you know, so everything goes through that, not just these microphones, but all other things kind of go through the finalizer as well to just kind of give it a once over. So that's kind of cool. I do have a telephone hybrid. Mine is by Telos, kind of the 900 pound gorilla in that space. JK Audio is another good company that makes telephone hybrids. The Telos One has been around for a long, long time. It has been replaced. I do have a landline. My landline is a VoIP line provided by Vonage. So proof that that works. And I don't have anybody on the line, but I just simply hit a button and there you go. So if I needed to record an interview or if I needed to record a phone call with somebody, there you go. I can do that. Two FireWire interfaces, both of them by PreSonus. I cannot, how can I say this? I cannot more highly unrecommend a company than PreSonus. They have incredibly awful customer service. They are incredibly rude, obnoxious people. And hey, I went to LSU. So I've lived in Baton Rouge before where they are headquartered, but I bought the FP10 FireWire interface, which has been replaced by the Fire Studio Project FireWire interface, and I happen to own one of each. And here's my beef. And I went FireWire, and these are rack-mounted, single-unit rack-mounted units, and they've got just ridiculous number of inputs and outputs, far more than I need. Big overkill. But, you know, you're looking at $400 units or so. Here's the problem with them. If the power goes out, and everything goes through a Panamax power management, so I've got proper surge protection and all that, but if the power goes out, and I don't mean a blackout, but let's say a brownout, so there's a power glitch. You know, the power flickers, and it flickers just enough that it kind of kills everything, and then it comes right back on. I guarantee your FireWire interface will be gone. And it won't go completely out. What'll happen is there'll be this annoying buzz that will be outputted in across all inputs. You can get it fixed if it's out of warranty. It'll only cost you $85, and you'll have to pay for shipping one way. And it's just so annoying. Oh, and they'll have it, by the way. They'll have it for a long, long time. And if you try to ask them, they'll act like you're just annoying the snot out of them. You know, if you'll try to inquire, you know, you've had the unit for 2 weeks. Can I get some idea when I might get it back? And they'll be very offended, by the way, if you ask. I know whereof I speak because I've got two units and I've had two units repaired one, two, three times. No, I take that back. I've had them repaired twice because I've got a unit that's out right now. Happened about 2 weeks ago. We had an ice storm here. Four weeks ago. We had an ice storm here. Power went out for about 2 minutes, came back on, buzz, and I knew immediately what it was, and it was the Fire Studio Project. So it was the newer of the two. And of course, you know, 90-day warranty. Well, that bit the dust a long time ago. So I've got it over here. I've been threatening to make a YouTube star out of it. I've been threatening to blow it up, find some city worker that might run over it with a steamroller or something and put that on YouTube to express my disdain for PreSonus and their inability. I did have a tweet exchange, you know, and I threw them under the bus, and 3 days later, you know, somebody responded, you know, apologies and what can we do? And I said, well, cut me a deal on fixing it. They went dark. I never heard from them again. Panamax power management I've got. So if you need an interface, buy anything but PreSonus. My suggestion, Focusrite. So there. I do have a headphone amp. I love the headphone amp. I have an Aphex HeadPod 454. It has been replaced. Well, I think it's still the same model, but it looks a little bit different. It looks like it's a robot now. I tell you, I have listened to some really high-end audiophile headphone amps before because A, I'm an audiophile, B, I'm a headphone freak. And I have listened to some $2,000-$3,000 headphone amps. I mean, some killer headphone amps. No, this isn't a $3,000 audiophile headphone amp, but I'm telling you, for $1.99, this is a stinking good headphone amp. Four outputs, so four different volumes, you know, for four different headphones. It's great. It really is great. Kensington keyboards, kind of the keyboard of choice, headphones. And I love headphones, but the headphones of choice are Sennheiser HD 25 Mark IIs. And that's what's on my head. Well, it's what's always on my head. If you see pictures or video of me, it's the Sennheiser HD 25 Mark IIs. A lot of people, you know, another kind of de facto standard is the 7506 Sonys. I believe AKG 35s are the same thing, but cheaper. And they're very good. I've just not found anything better. Well, I take that back. There are some high-end AKGs, you know, that are $500 that are just stinking hard to beat. But, you know, these were $1.99. The Sennheisers, I'll tell you what they are. If you see Joe Buck and these guys doing sports play-by-play, they have a boom microphone coming down to, you know, their mouth, and they have headphones on. Well, these are the headphones. The actual contraptions that they wear consist of these headphones with a broadcast quality XLR broadcast boom mic attached. So they're great. They are, here's what I don't like about them. They're more on ear than over the ear. Of course, I have Dumbo ears, so it would be preferential for me that it went completely over my ear, but they're very comfortable. On the video side, I have a Kodak ZI-8 sitting over there in the corner. You still got one of those? I do. Don't really need it. Not with an iPhone or an iPad, you know, but I've got it. I also have an Audio-Technica ATR-3550, really cheap. Corded lapel microphone. But here's what's great about it. I mean, the cord is like 30 feet long, so it's super long, and it's they're nice to have. Logitech C910 webcam. You know, it's HD. I know there's a 920. I don't know all the differences. I've got a 910. I've had a 910. No need to buy something different. I've heard pluses and minuses for both. I do have some software, and I didn't list this in the show notes. I should go back and edit it, but I've got a variety of little, there's a little program called iGlasses, and there's a program called, webcam settings or something like that, so that you can go in and you can do some different effects, and you can mirror image, you can go to black and white and all that kind of stuff. I've got those little pieces of software, and they're kind of cool. I sometimes like to do black and white stuff. But for video, ScreenFlow by Telestream is the video capture software of choice and the video recording software, editing software. It's great. It's terrific. I confess I do also have Camtasia for Mac. I got it in a Mac bundle deal. I think it was like $11, maybe $14. I mean, come on, I had to buy it. It's a great alternative to ScreenFlow, Camtasia for the Mac. And if you're on a PC, well, I don't know. ScreenFlow may have come out with something for Windows. I don't know. But Camtasia has it for sure. I have them both. I'm fancy like that. iMovie, of course, I have, as all Mac people do. I've got Apple QuickTime Pro. I've used it. Hey, do you have a DSLR or other video camera that will mount on a tripod? If you need camera stabilization, something that you can carry with you and you don't want to go, you know, crazy money, you got to click that link. I mean, this thing is what, $50, something like that. I don't ask me how it works, but it does. It's crazy good. Crazy, crazy good. So if you need something like that, there's a link over in the show notes for that. The internet is connected by way of an Ethernet cable to the iMac, but I do have an Apple AirPort Extreme, you know, the old flat square version, that does provide Wi-Fi to Yellow Studio guests. Various hard drives back it all up. Probably the most used piece of gear in the studio. No, it is the most used piece of gear. Well, okay, the computer is probably the most used piece of gear, but the second most used piece of gear is probably the Toshiba 42-inch HD TV on the wall. Yeah, I'm connected, man. I'm hooked up. Hooked up. I mean, come on, you got to be hooked up, right? We'll cue the music. Get the show on the road. Hey, do me a favor. Go over to iTunes, please. Leave me a review. That'd be great. Preferably a glowing review, but you can be honest. Won't bother me. However you care to roll, I would love it if you would subscribe to the podcast as well. We'll get back into the art of doing business and content marketing and all that stuff because, well, that is increasingly what I do. Kind of am steering away from consulting and coaching as much, although, you know, I'm not going to say I don't do it at all. I do, but really trying to focus on the content marketing kind of a thing, and especially helping service professionals, people who have a story to tell. I mean, that was what episode 204 was about. So we'll get back in the saddle and do the hardcore kind of business thing next time. Send me an email if you've got questions, by the way, results@bulanetwork.com. That's results@bulanetwork.com. Comments are closed on this post. In fact, I'm going to be closing comments on the entire website, and I'll tell you about that next time. So there's a teaser for you. We are about getting new clients, new customers. We're about serving existing customers better, and we are about trying to maintain some sanity in the process. I just call it not going crazy. So that really is what goes on here at BulaNetwork.com. I appreciate you listening. And I got nothing else that I can think of. So we'll wrap this up and put a bow on it. Maybe the longest episode ever. If you have a podcast, I'd love to hear from you. I'd like to know what your podcast is about. You can email me at results@bulanetwork.com. I'd like to connect like that. You can find me over at Twitter and Facebook and all of the usual places. There are social icon links at the website at bulanetwork.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas is where I'm coming from. This is the Yellow Studio. Why are you still here? Did you think I had something else to say? Well, I do. Hey, bonus material, if you were brave enough to hang in there and not click stop. I've got a podcast that I relaunched. It's over at leaningtowardwisdom.com. Leaningtowardwisdom.com is a domain that I've had for a long, long time. And I have rekindled the podcast over there. I did it some time ago, and the episodes all start with 4,000 something. It's only because it's kind of the fourth iteration, and Leaning Toward Wisdom is really nothing more than me kind of riffing on. So if you want more of that and you don't care so much about business, then get away from here probably and go over to Leaning Toward Wisdom. I'm trying to get it in iTunes. I'm having some difficulty because the podcast used to be in iTunes, and for whatever reason, iTunes dropped it. And so now when I resubmit it, it's like this feed has already been submitted. So I'm having to go through those gyrations right now, but you can find it over at leaningtowardwisdom.com. And I'd like your feedback about that too, because I just kind of throw out, I figured I needed to separate the stuff that was more business related and the Bula Network kind of stuff from the more personal stuff and the more, you know, inside stuff, to make it over there at Leaning Toward Wisdom. And so if you liked this episode, you might kind of like Leaning Toward Wisdom. You might not. It's really just all I'm trying to do, kids, is kind of be a little bit entertaining, mostly trying to be a little bit inspirational and to provoke a little bit of thought. And it's not that I'm holding forth as the grand poopah, because I'm just like you. We've got these struggles in life and we're just trying to figure this stuff out. We're just trying to figure it out. And we want everybody to think that we've got it figured out. Well, I'm here to tell you, I don't have it figured out. I'm just trying to figure it out. So if you're trying to figure it out too, then hey, maybe at leaningtowardwisdom.com, we can try to figure it out together. So there you go. That's my plug. And now you can click stop, because for real, I'm out of here.